Today's episode is brought to you by Cars.com. With over 2 million vehicles and 50,000 more added every day, Cars.com will match you with the perfect car for you, your budget, your life, your style. And if you're ready to say goodbye to your current car, Cars.com will get you an instant offer to cash it in. Just start by entering your license plate and get matched with a local dealer who will write you the check. So whether you're looking to buy or sell, just go to Cars.com. It's magical.
And we are back on another episode of the Silver Screen and Roll post-game show. Although, you know, I mean, number one, we need to still work on having Anthony come up with a name for this because that is ostensibly his job. And number two, this is not really going to be one of the normal post-game shows because I am joined by Jacob Rude. This is Harrison Fagan. And that was not really a game that I feel like we can take very much away from. Unless, Jacob, I know you may have like pressing thoughts on Talen Horton-Tucker's 34 minutes played in a 20-point loss to the Kings. But other than that, that was maybe the most meaningless NBA game I have ever watched, because like even down the stretch of the Lakers last couple of years, there were like tanking scenarios on the line. Like that game truly meant absolutely nothing for either team.
So you're telling me the shooting isn't fixed because we hit like 12 threes that game or 15 threes that game?
It almost seemed like both teams came to a gentleman's agreement that they were just not going to guard 3-point shooters and just let them get like kind of a workout in before the game. Like now, given kind of probably the hard feelings between Luke and the Lakers that I would imagine exist, that probably didn't happen. But it seemed like there was like a kind of tacit agreement to just like that no one was going to guard each other's open 3-point shooters.
Yeah, shout out to Grant, who I saw in the first half tweet, Luke Walton finally got the Lakers to shoot well from three-point territory. But yeah, that is
mean, but honestly accurate.
Oh yeah, very. I mean, it's nice to see Keefe make some threes, but he's about the only one in the rotation. I guess Dion, but we always know that Dion's just really hot and cold. But
yeah.
That would be about my only takeaway, is that Keefe hit some three-pointers and finally is starting to look like what we hoped he would be.
Yeah, I think if we're looking for actual takeaways from this game, we can respect this game enough to come up with like probably two. There's, you know, Keith doing that and looking like he's maybe starting to get his legs under him a little bit after, you know, he missed all of training camp. And so everybody was in my mentions, like, and in our comments, like, why isn't Keith playing more? What's wrong with him? Da, da, da. It's like, he missed all of training camp. Like after 4 months off, like it's going to take him some time to get his legs under him. And I think we're starting to see that over honestly the last couple games, I think, where he's really starting to look like just like he has NBA legs again and like the player that we kind of expected him to be. So I think that's good news. And then I think, you know, I joked about THT's 34 minutes, but you know, it was nice to see him go out there. Like I without having the box score in front of me, I believe he shot decently. He was playing hard-ish on defense, at least as hard as anyone on the Lakers was playing on defense. He had a couple hustle plays in the second half, like to come up with steals and stuff like that. You know, I think he's showing that he deserves, like, you know, at the very least, probably spot minutes to start the playoffs. And it, look, if he completely messes up in those, then you take him out and it's a quick hook on the rookie. But, like, I think he's earned the opportunity to get, like, 5 to 10 minutes a game in the first round.
Yeah, I was going to say, in the first round, Lakers will be coming up against an eight seed that, even if it is the Blazers, which is the flavor of the week, basically, in the bubble.
The best eight seed ever.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I'm sure there will be plenty of other discussion about the Blazers and that matchup if it comes to fruition. But even if it is them, yeah, I mean, he's come a long way even just in the – how long have they been in the bubble now? A couple weeks? Even in those couple weeks, he's come a really long way because I would have never envisioned him to even be getting spot minutes in the playoffs.
He was horrible in the scrimmage games. Like, you know, he would have like one or two moments during those games where like, okay, that's why he looked promising in the G League. And the rest of it was just bad. Like, I mean, I think even he would admit that it wasn't good. And like, but the player he's been when the games actually started to somewhat matter has been totally different. And it's been cool to see. Like, you know, he's 19. It's exciting to watch one of these young guys like start to kind of discover their sea legs a little bit.
We'd miss that for the two seasons that the Lakers weren't actively tanking. So it's nice to see a young player develop in front of our eyes again.
Yeah, it turns out all it took was like some players to instill winning habits around them, you know, I guess. So,
are you suggesting Nick Young did not instill winning habits around Jordan Clarkson?
This is a hot take, but I feel like Jordan Clarkson's career would be 20% better if Nick Young had not been his vet coming into the NBA.
20% is low. Lou Williams, I think, was on that team too.
Yes.
Which may...
Like, look, both of those guys had nice NBA careers. I would say that they are probably not a repeatable strategy in most ways for, like, how to have success and, you know, make it several years in the NBA.
Lou Williams is, like, tutoring to him was like, just float to the left and they'll call a foul every time. Like, just jump and kind of fall to your left and they'll call a foul. And... Jordan Clarkson spent 2 weeks trying to do that and couldn't figure it out.
Yeah. You know, anyway, I think, you know, segues to the Lakers lottery years side. The Lakers are in the playoffs, and it is after it going 3-5 in the seeding round games that I think most of us would say were, you know, if not disappointing, at least pretty mediocre. Like, it's not like anybody watched these seeding games. It's like, oh, man, the playoffs. Here they are, baby. Like, it's kind of hard to get really amped for them because – we didn't see outside of the Clipper game, like a whole lot of, and I guess like Anthony Davis dominating the Jazz, but you know, like there were moments where they looked okay. The game winner against the Nuggets was fun, even if it was against the Nuggets C team, but like this was not, and you know, I think it's probably not a coincidence that I mentioned their three wins in like the three things to be excited about. This was a very weird seeding round, and I just want let's get into some takeaways from that, because I think that is by far the more kind of meaningful thing to discuss here as we head into the weekend. And you know, as we're recording this right now, the two teams in the play-in round have not been decided. It's going to be some combination of the Blazers, Suns, Grizzlies, or Spurs, probably most likely, at least according to the odds, the Grizzlies and Blazers, just because they have to do the least to get in. But you know, it'll be one of those teams that the Lakers will be playing in the next round. I think, and we'll obviously preview that once that gets decided. But you know, Jacob, just from these eight games, like, what was your, like, are you concerned at this point after watching the Lakers play these games?
I don't even know if concerned was the word. A lot of the things I basically could tell they existed, but it was basically about halfway through that Nuggets game where it seemed like they were really kind of taking things serious a bit and started knocking down threes, and I was like, all right, this team is just kind of coasting more than I'm concerned about anything. So not really. There's a few small things. It's a little odd that they never really even like attempted to get a playoff rotation going, which I a lot of it was presumably to protect guys from getting hurt, which we've seen across the bubble, injuries and whatnot. So maybe that was a reasoning, and maybe they'll kind of use the first round as a ramp up into a playoff rotation. But I was maybe not concerned. I was maybe more surprised that they just really didn't even try to get a playoff rotation going in these eight games.
Yeah, I think that was like if we're hindsight being 2020 and we're like looking back at what Frank Vogel said going in, like that was probably honestly predictable. Like I don't think any of us would have actually predicted it was going to happen. But like if you really think about it, he was saying that he wanted to get minutes for the young guys so that they would like he could see what they could give them if they needed them in spot minutes, you know, injuries, illness, whatever. And like he said that he wanted to get a look at like a lot of these guys that hadn't gotten extended minutes. And like we saw that under somewhat weird circumstances in a few of these games, like JaVale just basically getting DNP CD'd so that he could get a look at more of their small lineups and how those looked against the Rockets. The answer was not good in that specific game, but I think that probably had more to do with LeBron not playing than it did with the Lakers going small. You know, they had today where Koo sat out just so that he could get more run for Dudley and Markieff. Like, there were just these scenarios where they would basically sit guys and say, like, all right, well, here's your audition game, Quinn Cook, or like, here's your audition game, Markieff Morris, like that kind of thing, and just see what those guys could give them. And I think on one hand, I can see the logic in it. On the other hand, I think, you know, I'm kind of with you in that it would have been nice to see them establish some consistency, but at the same time, you know, they didn't have a lot to play for. I can kind of see why they would want to play their cards close to the vest. And I think the one game where we did kind of see a playoff rotation was against the Clippers, where, like, you know, and that was a game that they came out and won and essentially secured the number one seed, even if it wasn't, like, mathematically secured at that point. It was basically impossible for the Clippers to catch them. And so I think we saw them really go all out in the one game that really mattered to them. And then a lot of this stuff, like, you know, people are talking about the Lakers don't have shooters. The Lakers don't have any ball handlers. They're really going to miss Avery Bradley. Like, you know, I maybe this is the optimist in me, but I just saw a team that just, like you said, was not locked in and did not really care that much about any of these games outside of kind of scattered moments.
The one game they cared about, that Clippers game, they won.
Yeah,
and outside of that, yeah, they pretty much just locked up the one seed and then we're like, all right, we're gonna coast our way into the playoffs. I was looking at that Clippers game. I mean, yeah, they basically treated that as a playoff rotation. LeBron and AD only played 35 and 36 minutes. Deion played 21 minutes. I wouldn't be surprised if he's in a lot of those closing lineups in playoff games, depending on who's shooting well and whatnot.
How many guys played that game, out of curiosity, since you have it pulled up?
The starting five plus Kuzma, Caruso, Deion, Dwight, and then JR played 8 minutes and Keith played 3 minutes.
Okay, so that's basically 10 guys. It technically is 11 guys, but basically 10. And like, I mean, hey, that's what Frank Vogel says he wants his playoff rotations to be. He says he wants it to be about 10 guys, and that's traditionally what he's done. So, you know, I think, you know, we kind of saw it there, I guess. And like, I know that some of the stuff, like shooting obviously is not just down to effort, but I think like the types of shots you're freeing up, the crispness of it, I think how much you're even locked into the game can honestly affect that a little bit. Like if you're just kind of lackadaisical out there, which I think is a lot of what we saw during these games, like you may not shoot as well. Like not everything's not going to look as crisp. I think it's hard to just like turn that on like a flip of the switch a lot of the time. And like, you know, they also had some bad luck. Clearly they're not going to shoot. They aren't the best shooting team, but they aren't going to shoot as badly as they did for like the middle six games or whatever, or middle five games or whatever of this, as they did in those games.
Yeah, I think, I mean, as you said, it's not an effort thing, the physical shooting of the basketball, but everything preceding that is. And I think that was mainly what the Lakers' problem was. And it was also weird. Every team in the bubble had a different approach to how they were handling these eight games. And the Lakers had a completely different approach than a lot of other teams because, unlike basically every other team, save for the Bucks, they weren't fighting for any kind of playoff seeding. They didn't need to push themselves in these games. And so they didn't, save for maybe that Clipper game. And outside of that, they just kind of treated this. I mean, most of the games felt like scrimmages, summer league games. I mean, today's game, that whole second half felt like a summer league game, basically. I don't know how hard LeBron and AD were playing at times, pretty much for most of it, but I still saw enough. I mean, a lot of my optimism is basically coming from the Clippers game and those few moments where they look locked in. I still think when this team actually does lock in that they're going to be fine. It is a little, I guess, weird that they just didn't spend any time in these games getting locked in. But fortunately, they're going to be the one seed and they're going to play an eight seed that they should be able to beat. So I guess that they're going to be treating that playoff series is the time to start to get locked in.
Yeah. So, all right. So I think it's clear from probably this part of the conversation that Jacob and I are kind of not that concerned about what we saw from the Lakers during this. But after a really quick break, we are going to tell you why possibly you should panic.
This is advertiser content brought to you by Frito-Lay.
Hello, I'm Chip Murphy, here to get you ready for the big tournament. Tonight, we break down who will be cutting. Cut! What are you two doing?
Sorry, Chip. Prez here got his feathers ruffled when I told him Ruffles has zero chance of winning the title.
And I was letting Dip know that she is not taking into account Ruffles' iconic ridges.
Guys, it's March. We have to start talking about the tournament.
We are. It is the 2023 Frito-Lay Snack-It.
We're talking about big-time matchups between Cheetos, Smartfood, Lay's, Sun Chips, and more.
Just head to the Frito-Lay Snack Bracket and vote for your favorite chip, pretzel, or dip for a chance to win up to $1,000 or a year's worth of snacks.
This sounds great. Keep up the good work.
Just go to Frito-LaySnackIt.SBNation.com. No purchase necessary. Sweepstakes ends 4/3/2023. Void where prohibited. Here's worth of snacks awarded in the form of 52 coupons, each good for one bag of chips. See official rules at Frito-LaySnackIt.SBNation.com.
That was a solid tease, right?
It was a solid tease, and I hope this is about Rondo.
Yeah, no. I mean, in some ways it kind of is, but not in maybe the way that you are referencing. I think... The one reason that I think that there is to be a little concerned was that the vibe coming from this team was as weird as it's been all season. Like, no matter what they've been dealing with, no matter what has been going on, like, you know, there was the trip to China where there was a lot of, like, kind of drama and they were all locked up in their rooms and it was, you know, it was a scary, like, situation for them, I'm sure, overseas. Like, you don't know, like, how, what's going on. Practices are getting canceled. Like, look, we can all sit over here and say, you know, nothing was going to happen to them. They're NBA players. It was probably just a weird, kind of unnerving situation to be in, to go over there for what's supposed to be like a basketball building trip and it turns into like a political controversy. It at the very least was not what they were prepared for heading in. And then you have, you know, like obviously on a much different note, there was the, you know, Kobe Bryant's death. Like the team really like obviously that is a real life thing that is more serious than the basketball implications. But what we saw how the team responded was that they rallied together. They all kind of had each other's back. They all supported each other. And like that, all of those are different situations than what they're encountering with now in the bubble. But, you know, there have been some weird kind of vibes, I think, coming out of this team and kind of in the subtext of what they've said in their media availability, kind of what they've said publicly and all of that stuff. It's just been strange. Like, we had the whole LeBron thing that I honestly think probably too much was made of in terms of him talking about there were things going on off of the court. But, you know, we had Danny Green talk about, like, how, you know, guys were missing their families and it's just been strange to kind of, like, how tough the bubble has been on everyone and how it just feels like basically you're living at work. And, you know, a couple other guys, Frank has talked about how frustrated he's been with, or, he, you know, he hasn't in a typical, very frank way, he has not necessarily complained. He has just, you know, kind of made it clear that he's not the happiest about the practice times in a very subtle kind of way in like, oh, you know, we would have practiced this day, but it was at night. So we didn't because I didn't want to do that to our guys type of thing. And mm-hmm. I think the circumstances and being away from their families for a veteran team, a lot of guys with kids, a lot of guys with wives and families, or, you know, in Danny Green's case, a fiance, like, you know, all of these guys, Kuz even has a long-term girlfriend now and his puppy and, you know, his mom. And I'm sure that lots of people that he's missing, a lot of all these guys have people that they're missing at this point and that they've been away from. And, you know, it's just been kind of strange. Like, you know, honestly, the LeBron thing I took as him being frustrated with the practice times as well. But I guess this is a long way of getting to, like, you know, we don't know what's going on with the team, but like, were you concerned at all about that kind of stuff? And do you think that that is potentially like, are we seeing this team fray at the edges a little bit? Or is this just something where, okay, they probably have to tough it out, but once the games start to mean a little bit more, it's going to be a little bit easier to lock in?
Yeah, that second point was almost exactly what I was going to say. I kind of go back and forth on that LeBron comment because, like, on one hand, I do – ultimately, I probably feel like it's what you said, where it's some of this practice stuff and basically things out of his control. But he was so cryptic about it, and he, like –
he likes doing that.
Yeah, he knows the weight of his words.
He likes letting you know that there's something, especially the media. He likes letting the media know that there are things that they don't know about. He likes to keep his secrets.
Yeah, and it was just such an odd way to handle that, basically. That I was just like, maybe it's something else, but...
And it came right before the JaVale DNP CD, which was, like, at the very least, strange timing. I don't know that there was a connection there. I'm not trying to imply that there necessarily was, but it was strange timing.
Yeah, ultimately, it doesn't seem like there was, because JaVale's returned and played basically his normal minutes. But, yeah, at the time, I was thinking, well, this is a pretty odd coincidence.
Yeah.
So I don't entirely know what his comments were about, but... And I'm sure we probably never will know, but I do think that there was an adjustment period basically with this bubble. We saw it with lots of people.
But they're one of the few teams still talking about it, which is a unique thing that, like, I think was brought up. And I apologize. I'm blanking on who wrote about this morning, like that. But they're one of the few teams that is still referencing it, like, weeks in. And I don't know. It just, like, it gives me a little bit of pause when before just predicting, like, okay, this team's gonna completely get back to normal, like, right away. Like, I mean, I think maybe we will see them struggle a little bit to start with, like, until they really are able to flip this mental switch and get going again.
Yeah, and I think there will be something to be said about locking in for the playoffs, and when those games start really mattering, a lot of that other stuff is going to go out the window once they get on the court. But I don't know that it ever will be.
When six teams leave, you're going to have, you know, the practice time stuff, like the routine stuff. It's going to get a little bit more back to normal. It still won't be normal because it's like, you know, 16 teams sharing three practice courts or whatever it is. But, like, you know, it'll be a little bit more normalized than it was with 22 teams doing the same thing.
Yeah, and within the next week and a half, 2 weeks, you're going to go from 22 teams in the bubble to 8 or however, 16 or however, no, 8.
It'll go 16 to 8, like, after the first round.
So, yeah, that's where I was getting at. After the first round, you're going to go from, 22 teams down to 8.
And you get family at that point, or some guys will, if they decide to bring their family out.
Yeah, so I think at that point it'll probably start to get a little easier and whatnot. But yeah, it's just been a really odd set of circumstances. I don't know that I was ever concerned too much, because this team's always had, at least during the regular season, had such, like, this positive vibe and, like, this closeness to it that I figured eventually that would kind of override any other issues that they're having. It was certainly odd.
And, like, and watching the bench, it looks like the interaction, like, you know, not to go full Bill Simmons body language doctor, but, like, it's looked relatively normal in terms of their celebrations and stuff like that. Like, you know, I mean, again, like, this is whenever we only get when the broadcast chooses to flash over there. So it's hard to make a judgment from remotely. But, you know, I think, you know, at the risk of reading too much into that, like, I do think that, you know, maybe there's a little something off, but I think that it's probably more easily chalked up to just the weird circumstances than it is, like, this team doesn't like each other.
Yeah, exactly where I would get at. I don't think anything within the dynamics of the team has changed. It's just everything around the team and every team is different. And for whatever reason, the Lakers are still talking about it.
You know, maybe LeBron's going to do, like, a documentary after this whole thing is over, and he's just going to be like, yeah, THT just wouldn't leave my room. The kid is, he's scared of the dark, and he kept, like, knocking on my door and asking to sleep in there because he said that his room was really scary. And, you know, there were weird, goofy sounds in the night. And so, like, you know, I don't know. Maybe THT was just having nightmares, and he just needed to go sleep on LeBron's couch or something like that.
Danny Green's tell-all podcast interview will be fascinating. After
maybe LeBron's just tired of hiding from JaVale McGee's vlog camera. He just, like, it is funny how little he is on there. Like, I think JaVale even knows, like, look, like, LeBron has his own content thing. I'm not going to bother him. Like, he's in a couple frames, but, you know, JaVale definitely understands, like, that LeBron does not necessarily need more cameras on him. But, you know, getting away from the body language doctor and the team, you know, chemistry doc, like, let's get to the team chemistry doctor. And that is Rajon Rondo, who's returning to the bubble. And, like, look, you know, again, I'm now a hypocrite because I'm saying I don't want to make too much of LeBron's comments. And then we're, like, doing exactly that for, like, the next 15 minutes. But, like, I think maybe there's something to the idea that the team missed Rondo from a unification and like locker room perspective. Because look, whatever you think of him as a player on the court, he is very clearly a guy who is respected by everyone in that locker room, who is close with basically everyone in that locker room, who takes the young guys under his wing, who relates to the veterans really well. He has been a bridge on, like, this is going like back years now to various different teams between the veterans and the young guys. Like, he is, whatever you think of him as a player, a unifying presence. And I do think, I know that, like, you know, every time I tweet about Rondo getting closer to a return, my mentions are just a tire fire of just like, make him an assistant coach, block him from the bubble. Like, if Frank plays him, they should fire him, like all that stuff. But I think Rondo getting back into the bubble is a good thing for the Lakers from the perspective of, here's another guy that can kind of make things seem normal again, even from the bench. If, you know, if things are getting weird, like, this is a guy that can, you know, he's not afraid to talk to LeBron, to talk to AD, or to mentor the young guys, you know, when all this stuff is going on. And so I do think that Rondo, he's, by the time this podcast drops, like, he's getting back into the bubble on Thursday night. He has to quarantine for 4 days. He's going to continue serving as an honorary assistant coach for the Lakers until he returns to the court. But I don't know, like, is this, do you buy into that? Like, do you think that Rondo coming back can help this team a little bit?
I mean, I jotted down some notes before we started, and one of them says, did we actually need Rondo?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a valid question at this point, like, with how weird this whole thing has gone with him. It's like, basically, as soon as he left the bubble, you know, they had a couple preseason games after that because it was the first practice, but how much can you really take from those? And, you know, they still locked in for the Clippers, to their credit, but maybe there is something to be said about Rondo holding everybody accountable game to game. Everyone but himself for their play, apparently.
And it was something Christian asked me last week on our podcast, if I thought Rondo would help fix any of the issues they had. And my immediate response is no, but I was mainly just thinking at it from an on-court perspective. And there is something to be said about having another leader type figure inside the bubble. And like you said, a guy that'll hold guys accountable. He's not afraid to speak up to a LeBron or an Anthony Davis. Not that they necessarily needed it, but it's nice to have that type of player out there still.
You know, LeBron may have needed it when he was cryptically teasing that there were chemistry issues with no further context. He may have needed Rondo there to either talk him out of that one or talk to him after that one.
Yeah, but it's going to be interesting as well to see how he is integrated back into the team. Because I don't really – man. I mean, J.R. Smith played a lot more in this bubble than I thought he would. And maybe a bunch of his minutes will go to Rondo, but like, I think Deion's been so good in this bubble that you can't not play him big minutes.
And Deion and Rondo, I do not think is a workable backcourt combo.
No, not at all. And so, and Rondo, or excuse me, Caruso and Waiters have been a really good, last week when I looked, I haven't looked.
They've had like the best net rating of any two-man duo on the team during the bubble, right? Like, I think them and Kuz was also like among three-man lineups really highly ranked the last that I looked.
Yeah, so among two-man lineups that have played at least 10 minutes together, they're third. It's LeBron and Dudley, Dudley and Kuzma, and then Deion and Caruso.
Is Dudley the key to the Lakers' success? I think maybe that's the question we need to be asking now.
And having watched him for just the second half of today, no, he is not. I was going to see where Deion ranked in some three-man lineups. But, I mean, I did not remotely expect this from him inside the bubble. LeBron, Deion, and they've only played 4 minutes. So you're looking at, yeah, Deion Caruso Kuzma is plus 40.1 in net rating in 54 minutes together inside the bubble.
Like, that's good. That's probably not sustainable, but that's good.
No, that is very good. A 124.6 offensive rating. The 84.5 defensive rating is not.
And a lot of those minutes are probably coming without LeBron, given that it's those three. Like, I think that a lot of them probably did come with AD, but a lot of them probably came without LeBron, which finding good LeBron or non-LeBron combos is, like, that's valuable for this team. And we saw that, you know, non-LeBron combos with Rondo taking his spot this year were not particularly effective in most cases.
Yeah, and that's what was interesting is that As you said, a lot of them came without LeBron. The most used lineup with those three had AD and KCP in it. The top two most common lineups were without LeBron. Three of the top four were. So, yeah, Deion's been kind of the bridge that the Lakers have been searching for those non-LeBron minutes.
Yeah.
And I had the off-court net rating, which it's hard to say with – I mean, it's -6 with LeBron off the court.
There's also so much statistical wonkiness in these games, like because of the weird lineups they, but like it's hard to take for like especially single man, like net rating, I think is almost worthless for the bubble at this point because of how weird the lineups they've played have been.
So you're suggesting Jared Dudley's +23.1 net rating isn't sustainable?
I'm gonna say that's probably what I'm seeing here.
Is that Dudley is the key.
they're gonna say if Frank did his lineups exclusively on net rating this year, that would be quite something to watch. Like just single man net rating. Like, well, it's clearly the starters are Dudley, Caruso, like, you know, I don't know, like Quinn Cook, like
mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, if you're doing the five man lineup for the bubble, it's Caruso, Deion, Kuzma, Dudley, and Dwight, which is definitely winning you a title.
Yeah, I mean, I think you heard it here first via NBA.com stats. I think, but anyway, in all seriousness, like I do think that there is like Rondo. I don't know. It's going to be tough when he gets back because and he's actually able to play, which may still be a bit like as of right now, we are nearly 5 weeks since he hurt himself and his original timeline was 6 to 8 weeks. And again, like that may not be from the injury. That might be from the surgery. You know, that happened a couple days later. Like, so there's a little bit of kind of wiggle room here. And then obviously there's about 2 weeks of gap in between, you know, that range of the original timeline. But like, you know, when he gets back, whenever that is, whether it's first round, second round, conference finals, like, you know, I know he's been working out with Kurt Rambis in, you know, I think that what we can say is the weirdest Lakers duo of all time. just like Kurt Rambis and Rondo in a random gym in Orlando somewhere, just working out. Like, I just imagine like Kurt just making Rondo run wind sprints or something, like as the Rocky music plays. But Rondo has not been playing. And so he went from like 4 months off to hurting himself on the second day of training camp. And as good of shape as he looked like he was in, and, you know, as much as I cannot disparage Kurt Rambis's level of, you know, workouts that he can put you through, we don't know what he's going to look like when he gets back. I think Frank's going to have a tough decision here because obviously, as of right now, there are circumstances that paint a picture that Rondo is valuable to team chemistry. Does that continue if he's no longer hurt and he's not playing significant minutes? And if he does get back into the rotation, does that hurt the team on the floor? It's a weird needle to thread as things appear right now.
Sorry, I blacked out after you started talking about a Rocky training montage, and that's all that was picturing in my head was like Eye of the Tiger with Caruso and Rondo, like running in the snow or something. And like,
well, Rondo literally did boxing matchup workouts too during the quarantine. So maybe like Kurt Rambis and him were just literally fist fighting, getting ready for a second round matchup with Chris Paul. Like Rondo is, he's just waiting. Like there's a Kurt Rambis yells an activation word from, you know, his seat and whatever. And Rondo just goes like Born Identity on Chris Paul and, you know, ends the Thunder series.
I didn't even think about the fact that he's probably going to come back in time to play the Thunder in round two now.
If they beat the Rockets.
Oh, well, yeah. Well,
A big if. Even without Russell Westbrook, that's a big if. If James Harden is really good and like may be able to get them past the Thunder by himself.
But, yeah, now I'm completely changing everything about my thoughts on Rondo. If he's coming back for a playoff series against Chris Paul, like, start him.
Because I mean, at that point, if it's against Chris Paul, you have to use him just because for whatever reason, Rondo fueled by anger, like, is one of the greatest players in it. Like, anger Rondo is better than playoff Rondo, honestly. Like,
and we get anger Rondo in the playoffs.
It's why I've been saying all year that Frank Vogel needs to, like, have – you know, you remember those old subliminal messaging ads that LeBron used to do? Frank Vogel needs to splice little headshots of Chris Paul into all of their game film of opponents. And, like, you know, slight little Photoshops of him on Lillard's head, something like that for the first round if Rondo's back. Like, you know, just get him into anger mode and ready to fight Chris Paul, and that's when he plays at his best.
Now I'm just thinking about him like walking onto the court and it's like Patty Mills across from him and he'd just be like, I'm going to kill you tonight, Chris.
It's like that scene from The Waterboy.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, what did you say about my mama?
Yeah, you're done tonight. You're not scoring a single thing tonight, Chris. And like Patty Mills is just looking at him like, what in the world is this guy doing?
Rondo's just whispering stuff about Chris Paul under his breath when he's guarding, like, you know, I don't know, like CJ McCollum or something. Yeah, anyway, I think, you know, that, again, Rondo is going to ultimately be a question for another day, but I do think that his absence has made it kind of a more interesting question than the are the Lakers better with or without Rondo debate already was throughout the year. Real quick before we wrap up, like, I do want to get into, because, you know, let's fly blind into the Ooh. Playoff matchup scenarios and whatever. Like, which team, we don't know who they're going to play, but which team scares you most out of the four? Are we in agreement? Like, are we in agreement on it?
I mean, it's Portland probably just because of Dame.
Oh, I disagree. I think it's the Suns because the bubble Suns are the best team in NBA history, evidently. If they continue, especially if they continue their undefeated streak tonight.
Well, that's fair. The bubble Suns are some, I guess they're like the full team version of angry playoff Rondo.
Yeah. No, in all seriousness, I think most people would universally agree the Blazers are the biggest threat. You and I joked about it earlier on in the show. I think they're being overstated as a threat at this point. Like, you know, again, this whole audio segment, at the risk of this all getting clipped as like an old takes exposed thing from Portland bloggers, is, oh, at HM Fagan said this before the playoff. Like, look. Like, are we really that intimidated of a team that is having to, like, fight for its life to make the 8 seed? Like, that doesn't have anyone to guard LeBron, that is led by Ramon Sessions with a luckier jumper? Like, I mean...
Okay, you really went wild there at the end.
Everyone was nodding along and then started screaming at the last part.
Yeah, I mean, it's such a weird... Dame is absolutely incredible. I'm not going to call him Ramon Sessions with
him. To be in all seriousness, neither am I. Dame is obviously like really good. You know, I think that he has shown how special he is, especially this year, both from like a mentality of like rallying his team and keeping them engaged for this, and just from, you know, a scoring and playmaking and making his teammates better. Like his resume is basically unimpeachable at this point. He's really special.
However, I agree with you on all that. He had to score 61 for them to beat the Mavs by 3. He had to score 51 for them to beat the Sixers by 3. He had to score 45 for them to pull away late against Denver. Like, everybody's talking about the wild scoring run he's on, which is true, but they're still barely winning these games.
Lillard time, Jacob. They're unstoppable in the clutch. Lillard time.
Listen.
He did the watch point thing.
The point, yeah, and his – put some respect on my name thing I thought was corny as hell, basically.
It was it was very funny that he looked directly at the camera and did it.
Yeah. Like, yeah. But everybody is respecting you. I don't know what you're
doing. Like, I don't know. Who is not respect? I mean, maybe he really is, like, that fueled by my tweets and my constant. Like, at this point, it's become a bit. Like, I honestly, like, I know how the good Dame is. I just think that it's funny that I'm now associated as, like, the biggest Dame hater on the planet. And so, like, do I lean into it sometimes? Absolutely. Will I post a Photoshop picture of Rondo with Dame in his lap as his, like, as his son if the Lakers win in the first round? 100%. But, like, you know, Dame is really good. I know Pete is going the extra step of calling him Mr. Lillard for the entire, you know, possible playoff run. But, like, he may not even make it to, like, can we let them make the 8 seed before we start talking about them upsetting the Lakers? Like, that's all I ask. And even at that point, it's like you said, they had to claw and scratch their way in. They narrowly lost to the Clippers, who the Lakers did beat when they actually tried this year. And, like, are we really all of the mind that the version of LeBron we saw in this seeding round, like, is the one that we're gonna, like, how stupid are we and how short are our memories that every single time, like, we, you know, how many years in a row have we watched LeBron play completely listless and unmotivated basketball down the stretch of the regular season and then just destroy some poor team in the first round, you know, whenever he decides to wake up for it? Like, you know, and the Blazers, they literally do not, like, look at their roster. They do not have anyone that can, like, even credibly guard him in any way. Like,
that was going to be my next point, is I pulled up their starting lineup from that Mavericks game, which is their most recent game when we're recording this. Melo would be the one that would have to guard LeBron.
Yeah, I saw somebody post the photo of like the guy crying as he points a gun at someone, and it's like with the caption like LeBron when he has to end Melo's redemption tour, and I think that basically is gonna be LeBron if Melo is in the he's gonna be texting him like, bro, can you ask like Terry if you cannot start? I really don't want to do this to you, man.
Yeah, I mean they
see a single tear going down his cheek as he dunks on him. Like
it's yeah, exactly. It's they played eight guys in this Mavericks game, and one of Melo, Zach Collins, Gary Trent Jr., or Hezonja are going to have to guard LeBron.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, and that's – I mean
– hey, Hezonja blocked LeBron at the buzzer once last year and initiated the washed king bit. So
I was going to say, I think that's where Anthony's He Looks Washed tweet came from.
That is where it came from.
Yeah, which, I mean, in the moment, fair.
Look, at the moment, yeah.
Yeah, but it would be some kind of hilarious, like, I don't want to call it redemption, but, like, irony, I guess, if he just eviscerates Hezonja for four
yeah,
games.
Yeah, redemption. Amid the many people who are questioning whether or not LeBron was better than Mario Hezonja will finally be silenced.
I mean, he would call it redemption, but yeah. The rest of us would just laugh as he roasted Hezonja. But I mean,
yeah, his like 80 word long hashtags, like nobody believed I could do this. F you, Hezonja. No longer washed king.
Yeah. And that's all one hashtag.
Yeah.
That's always been my, I mean, it was the same thing during the regular season. They had nobody to match up with Anthony Davis, and he just roasted them every game.
I remember that first game. He literally looked like he was playing against children. Like, I know they have Nurkic back now, but and they have Zach Collins and, you know, whatever. But, like, I just do not – like, I know the Lakers have no one to guard Dame. They don't really have anyone to guard CJ. Like, this is going to be a shootout for sure. Like, but I think I have more faith that the third best defense in the league for all season and one of the better ones in the bubble, even despite their struggles, can turn it around and figure out something to slow those guys down. Like, I think too much is being made of the Lakers can't stop quick guards and stuff like that. Like, yes, that was a struggle for them even when Bradley was in the lineup, but like they have enough guys that they can force those guys into tough shots. They can communicate, get rebounds, stop possessions, whatever. Like, and I have more faith in them figuring out a defensive solution to somewhat deal with the Blazers than I do in the Blazers figuring out some kind of solution to slow down the Lakers, other than hoping they continue to miss threes.
Yeah, I mean, the Lakers have some personnel that could make things difficult, as you said, to at least slow them down. Nobody is slowing down LeBron on that line or in that that rotation. And Nurkic is about the only guy who could do any kind of slowing down of AD, and that's about it.
Yeah, it's going to be – all I'm saying is it's going to be funny when this podcast, like, is the last one before we have our next one, and, like, the play-in's already – the play-in gets decided after this, and, like, let's say Portland loses tonight and they don't even make it. Like, that will be funny and make this rant even funnier. But anyway, I just think too much is being made of the Blazers at this point. I respect them. I think they're one of the stories of the bubble. Dame is incredible. But I just – let's chill on the they're going to upset the Lakers talk. And I think Lakers fans probably needed to hear two people just acknowledge that at this point because of how widespread and, like, chic it's become to, like, talk up the Blazers as if they're the 73-win Warriors or something like that.
Objectively, the most hilarious outcome is the Blazers not even making the playoffs after all these talking heads have said.
That would be so funny. Like, there's nothing I'm rooting for harder than that.
Oh, I'm rooting really hard for the Spurs. Because I think the Lakers would obliterate them, but...
Yeah, I mean, no, as Lakers fans, like, people should be rooting for the Spurs or the Grizzlies to make it in. Like, the Suns, you know, I think the Lakers would handle them easily, but they're really hot right now. Yeah. And, like, you know, I would say the Spurs and Grizzlies are probably lesser threats than that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Anyway, this has been the longest post-game show I think we have done in SSR history. So we are going to wrap it up. Jacob, do you have anything coming that you want to plug before we get out of here?
No, good Lord. I'm finally done covering the Pelicans after tonight. So good Lord, thank you.
Oh, again, another team that was, you know, really looking to maybe upset the Lakers in the first round. Zion's coming, really dangerous.
You know. Talked about how this game today, the Kings game was – boring. On Tuesday, the Pelicans played the Kings. Both of them were eliminated from the playoffs, and neither of them could improve their draft stock. So literally the most meaningless game in NBA history.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's what these circumstances led to, some weird games down the stretch, just like the regular season does in different ways. But anyway, I am Harrison Fagan. That was Jacob Rude. Jacob, thank you for joining me. And this has been another episode of the Silver Screen and Roll podcast. We will have another one for you Monday. And, you know, by then we may know a little bit more about the play-in or the results of that. So, you know, stay tuned to silverscreenandroll.com all weekend for all your coverage of that. And subscribe to our show on iTunes, Spotify, wherever podcasts are found. And we will talk to you next time.